Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Stroud under center. Takes a knee. The season is over for the Houston Texans. They charge into Arrowhead Stadium, but come up short 23-14 and see their drive for the AFC Championship game come to an end. Kansas City prevails. Texans start their offseason. The Chiefs back in the AFC Championship game, and Houston 14 points on the board at the end of the night. They could not get it done here, and they'll reset going into 2025.
Yeah, here we are heading into another interesting offseason, and here we are once again. Sixth time the Texans make the divisional round. Sixth time we come in on a Monday licking our wounds and wondering what needs to happen for the Texans to get a little further. And there's a lot to dig into with this game. Both, I think, that people are very interested in here locally about the game itself, the way the Texans played, what the future looks like for this team. And then I think, too, storylines with this game that popped even beyond just Houston and Kansas City nationally. Yes, we will talk about the officials in this game. I know this is a strict, no referee complaining zone, but to a degree, we will lift the ban today because of the egregious calls. How are you doing this morning, my friend?
I'm good. I'm trying to lift myself out of this depression that I get at the end of every football season where my team doesn't win a Super Bowl, which has been every single season ever in the history of me as a Bills fan growing up. And it's tough, man. It's tough. And it is. It's compounded by the fact that you and I, especially, Sean, I think, have been getting attacked over and over again by people who traditionally and normally love us because we warned everybody, hey, don't get too wrapped up in the officiating. And then by gar.
I'm like, these people won.
I have been under attack nonstop.
Me too.
By people who I want to like me. Yeah. I don't mind being hated and despised by various people. But the people who I want to like me are also like angry at me right now. Yeah. This is the one thing I'd say about this. I'm angry, but it's a little bit different. I'm not mad at the officials themselves because honestly, the way that rule is enforced, in the way it's written in the playbook and the way they expect the officials to call it, it's bogus. And Pat Mahomes exploits it to an extreme degree. He takes a rule that is meant to protect the safety of quarterbacks, and then he goes and puts himself in danger consciously to draw flags and exploit a rule that's supposed to protect quarterbacks. The NFL, for whatever reason, has decided not to make the fake slide illegal. Pat Mahomes is a practitioner of that. And then the NFL basically instructs the officials to, whenever there's any doubt about it at all, throw the flag. And then after that, they won't make it reviewable. Mm-hmm. So the second unnecessary roughness, I think, was the most egregious in that Mahomes had the chance to run out of bounds easily. It was right there for the taking. Instead, he put himself back into danger and ran towards three full-speed running defenders and then basically just and then slid late, puts the defenders in an impossible position where they can't help but hit him or worry about the fake slide or anything else. And you end up getting penalized for it and extending a drive. It's unacceptable. They got to fix this. I'll blame it's the competition committee. It's Pat Mahomes himself because it's Bush League bogus crap that he doesn't really need to do. He's damn good enough already. Mm-hmm. And then also, look, it's on the coaches and owners, too. Why have you not put more pressure on the competition committee? This is as much on D'Amico and Cal McNair as it is on anybody else here, because they allow this crap to exist.
Yep.
They're out of my system.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think just specific to that Mahomes play, because we're gonna hear from D'Amico on this, Will Anderson Jr. on this in just a second, Troy Aikman on this. Man, Pat Mahomes almost broke Troy Aikman on Saturday afternoon. Like, Troy was ready to run down to the field himself and strangle Patrick Mahomes, I think. That specific play, it's not just running. I'm fine with guys that can get out of bounds and running back into danger if they're actually trying to gain yards. You know what I mean? Like, if you're running back in,
seeking contact.
If you're running back in there and you're putting a shoulder down, or you're actually running like a running, like Josh Allen would
if
run back into it.
You're making forward progress,
yes,
right.
Yeah. Like,
running laterally.
I have no problem with a guy not getting out of bounds if he's trying to act like a football player, not like James Harden. You know what I mean? Like, he.
Right.
And then there's the flop later in the game. Like, Mahomes is a great player. Maybe the greatest player of this particular segment of football that we're in, you know, last 7 or 8 years.
Yeah.
That stuff's a joke. Like, that is an out and out, that's a flat out joke. Mahomes should be ridiculed for that stuff.
The flopping, especially. Like, flopping needs to be fined heavily, especially for quarterbacks, because they make so much damn money. Yeah. The fact that it's not reviewable, the fact that the foot first slide in close quarters is never the best way to protect yourself as a quarterback. Case Keenum said as much when we had him on a few weeks ago. You know, what he tells young guys all the time is, if you're going to slide feet first, you better have room to do it. Because the last thing standing, the last thing remaining to hit by any defender, whether he tries to hit you or not, is your head, and it's dumb.
Yep.
Like, if Pat Mahomes genuinely wanted to avoid contact there, he would have turtled and gone down just to the ground.
Yep.
And it's just, it's so damn un-American. Yeah, it's just wrong. And was it a factor in the game? Yes. I'm kind of wired to try to not blame officiating, because officiating is like a weather event. It's going to happen. You're going to have bad. This one bothers me because the actual rule and the way it's enforced, not the individual officials themselves, the actual rule itself is bogus. Well, and it's on. I blame Cal McNair and D'Amico Ryans as much as anybody else. Get this crap fixed in the offseason. Peyton Manning used to exploit the rule book all the time.
Right.
They fixed it.
Yes.
They changed two specific rules because Peyton Manning was dodgy in that manner.
As the local face of ownership and coaches, you blame them. I'm just picturing one of them getting in their car and turning on the radio, and they're like, what did I do?
Get this crap taken
of. Yeah, you're right.
It's bogus. It's bad for football.
I agree. No, I agree with you. Here was D'Amico after the game, and didn't exactly mention the referees by name, but boy, this sure does seem like a tip of the hat at the officiating here.
Yeah, we knew going into this game, man, it was us versus everybody. Right? When I say everybody, it's everybody, all of whatever. Everybody, the naysayers, the doubt, right? Everybody. We had to go against today. And, you know, going with that, knowing going into this game, what we were up against, we can't make the mistakes that we made, right? We had a lot of self-inflicted mistakes that happened, whether it's special teams not converting our kicks defensively, not being where we're supposed to be in coverage, all offensively, not protecting our quarterback and keeping him clean. So, you know, you marry that on top of everything else that we had to deal with, it's going to be a really tough uphill battle.
Okay, and so the pause there, right before he said everybody again, to me, that pause was clearly, you may as well put referees in that blank right there if we were transcribing it.
Yeah.
D'Amico acknowledging at the back end there that, there's plenty the Texans did wrong in this game, and we absolutely should acknowledge that. Like, the Texans, to Seth's point earlier, the referees didn't lose this game for the Texans. It was an element in the game not going their way, to be sure. But they outgained the Chiefs by 124 yards. They didn't turn the ball over. They were well over 50% on third down in this game. Like, they kept the chains moving in this game. They were
honestly going back and watching the second half again. CJ Stroud played magnificently.
Yes,
the play when he had actual time to throw.
Yeah.
And to the receivers he was throwing to, without Nico Collins on the field for much of the second half, like, he made some incredible throws.
Yeah.
It was a great personal performance by him.
He was tight windowing John Metchie and Xavier Hutchinson in this game. You know, like, so they were 10-17 on third down. They held the ball 7 minutes longer than the Chiefs. In a game against the team that held the ball for 10 of the final 11 minutes the last time these two teams played a month ago, they held the ball for 7 minutes longer. Again, I do this exercise, Seth. Like, you told me those things before the game, that they were going to do these things, the Texans, like, blindly. I would have said, I bet they win this game. If they're 10 of 17 on third down, if they're out possessing and out gaining the Chiefs significantly, they're not turning the ball over on the road in this game. Are you kidding me? And yet, the F-ups were so bad. It wasn't just the penalties that Mahomes got for being Mahomes. They had other very bad penalties in this game. The 8 sacks allowed are the huge thing, and then that there was a sea of them, a barrage of them when you're trying to come back in a one-possession game. The special teams, Frank Ross and his crew picked the worst time to be the worst unit for this team on Saturday. They were awful, and the defense let Travis Kelce kill them slowly throughout the afternoon.
The special teams. I mean, the only person outside of Houston who's happy about the way that game was officiated was Kymie Fairbairn. Because he hasn't been lambasted nearly enough for whatever the hell that was. Whatever the hell that was. He was lucky to make the one field goal he did make. It was really, really bad.
God, that's right. He barely snuck that one in there.
Tommy Townsend with that 34-yard punt when you really needed a good
needed
punt.
Needed it. Yeah.
They got it. The Chiefs got the ball at midfield. The Texans' defense... I was harsher on them after the game than I should have been, just because I forgot how bad the field position was on that touchdown drive after the Tommy Townsend 34-yard punt.
Yeah.
The kickoff return, Chris Boyd doing whatever the hell he was doing, that was just a mess and a disaster. That was really, really bad.
It was bad.
That was frustrating.
It was bad.
The offensive line, I knew they were going to lose some snaps in that. I don't know exactly why they felt like for four quarters Shaq Mason was going to at some point turn it around and start playing good football.
Yeah.
Okay, there's that. I'm not mad at Bobby Slowick for having Dalton Schultz on a defensive end on that one sack. I'm mad at Dalton Schultz. Look, the Chiefs were blitzing like crazy. They were sending six-man blitzes over and over and over again. Yeah, at times when you do that, you're going to end up with a tight end on a defensive end. Try to slow him down a smidgen.
Yeah.
Can you slow him down a smidgen?
Yeah.
The running backs were awful in pass protection and in blitz pickup. The 8 sacks is unacceptable. It's not like... I saw that one guy on Twitter, Fluffy Foo Foo Bear or whatever, said that he was adamant that, look, the Texans were sad after those bad calls went against them. And that's why, all right, are we really going to do this? Are we going to be talking about your football players being sad? I'm sorry, I didn't realize the offensive line was depressed the entire season, and that's why pass protection was so bad. I didn't realize that Dalton Schultz only pass blocks when he's got the warm fuzzies. And if he's got the cold pricklies, it's not a good day for it. They got to hold up their end of the bargain there, too. The offense just simply wasn't good enough this year. They did some really good things in this game. I thought C.J. Stroud was really good individually. I'll make some excuses for him because the wide receivers... they were banged up enough going into the game. And then Nico Collins is on the field. Maybe according to Floofy Bear, he was on the sideline with melancholy instead of an actual injury.
Yeah. Boy, did you see the play that people thought maybe Nico got popped in that game? Like the play that got him that injury in that game? But he got chipped downfield by a linebacker, like popped right in the ribs by a linebacker. Yeah. All right, so we're off and running. We're going to dig plenty into this game. We're here for 2 hours. The off-season stuff for us will probably be just sprinkled in and probably more attacked later on in the week, because there's still a ton to dig into in this game and in this season here with the Houston Texans, as we're off and running here on a Reaction Monday, the final Reaction Monday of the year, at least when it comes to Texans content. Saturday's game, though, in my opinion, as we're going to watch the conference title round next week, yet another one that won't involve the Texans. Saturday's game, in my mind, was lost long before Saturday. I'll explain coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
organization, his team, and all year, man. He has blessed us and favored us tremendously, man. And I just got to give all glory to him. And we knew it was going to be us against the refs going into this game. And, you know, I talked to you guys early this week. And I was just telling him, like, man, like, we got to go out there and we got to do us better. And, you know, in some instances we didn't do that, some instances we did. So we just got to keep going, man. Next offseason, you know, get the guys together, man. And, you know, everybody just coming together and just keep building that team chemistry and get past this hump.
It's funny, there were Texan players who were much more, I thought, outspoken about the officiating in that game on Saturday. Will Anderson's cut there got the most attention because he literally used the phrase, it was us against the refs. So that got, that was literally, that was a headline on ESPN on the bullet points on the side there. And I mean, I thought Will kind of redirected it back towards, like, we got to be better also here, but the fact that I wanted to play that whole cut, including Will talking about how God has blessed them during the year.
Oh, he's talking about God. I didn't know if he was talking about God or me.
He was talking. I thought the same thing. I'm like, is he talking about? Nope, God. But the reason I left that there is because he was literally leading into his media availability. I wanted to illustrate that. Like, this wasn't the response to necessarily like a question in the middle of the whole thing. Like, Will's giving all glory to God and then immediately is going into, yeah, we thought it would be us against the refs. Like, that was the lead into the whole thing. So that was a big topic, a big talking point with a lot of the guys. I would say, to the credit of everybody who talked about the officials, specifically D'Amico Ryans, CJ Stroud as well, they did all redirect it back to them saying, look, you know, it's not, we didn't lose this game specifically because of officiating.
And I'll say again, look, Mahomes manipulates the rule book. And the officials themselves, I can't get angry at those dudes. They made a couple calls in that game that easily could have gone the other way and wouldn't have been overturned. The Eric Murray pass breakup, I don't think that would have been overturned by replay if it had gone one way or the other. The Dalton Schultz reception on the sideline, I don't think that necessarily would have been overturned by replay. Like, it wasn't like every single call went against the Texans. It's just that those roughing the passer or the unnecessary roughness ones were very, very, very ticky-tack gray area BS. I mean, I see Jared Goff get flat out blasted in the face on an interception return yesterday, and no, like, nothing there. Jaden Daniels got shoved 3 yards out of bounds. Nothing. It's that Mahomes flops and complains and whines his way, puts himself into danger at times, and the way the rule is written, they end up getting those calls, and it's bogus. Yeah. It's Bush League. It's cowardly, and it is un-American, but I'll set all that aside. The fact of the matter is, look, the Texans are amongst the most heavily penalized teams in the league when it comes to unnecessary roughness. Mm-hmm. They play a violent brand of football. Pat Mahomes is really good at drawing that specific penalty and doing it in a faking slides and ducking back in bounds type of ways. It's a factor going into the game. A factor going into the game. You're going to have to fight that perception.
Well, and I tell you what, one way, and this is a good lead into what we're going to talk about here, one way to at least diminish that, it would seem, would be play these games at home. Get better than a 4 seed. Be better than a 4 seed, and you're not leaving yourself open to the human nature that is not just a football thing, it's a basketball thing, it's a baseball thing. That's one of the reasons why home field advantage is something that's very desirable, is that the game, to this point, is still being officiated by humans, not robots, not computers yet. Here was D'Amico Ryans after the game saying, we're not that far off.
Yeah, I don't feel like we're that far away. Like, these teams are in a whole different tier than us. It's a matter of us just doing what we're supposed to do, and we'll be just fine.
All right, and so to a degree, I agree with him, Seth. I mean, that was not an evenly played game on the scoreboard necessarily, but if you were just to watch that game, it didn't look like play to play. If you just ignored the scoreboard, you don't look at that. You don't look at those two teams going, all right, this one is significantly better than that.
They're definitely within reach. I think the offensive line is the biggest glaring issue. I was just looking at, and again, take PFF grades with a grain of salt, but in the aggregate, it's interesting that the only two teams in the playoffs whose offensive lines were in the bottom half of the rankings were the Steelers and the Texans. Mm-hmm. It just, and that's what it looked like. That offensive line is just not good enough. I think I'll give Laremy Tunsil a lot of credit for, I think, honestly, really trying to reinvent himself midway through the season when he just had to figure out how to stop getting false starts. I think he committed himself to being a better run blocker and a more involved complete player than he's ever been. So I fully credit him for that. It was cool to see. Tytus Howard did some good things as a left guard, but on the sum total of it all, they're just a bad offensive line. There's room for improvement and hope. Blake Fisher is still young, all of that. But they're just, I'm watching some of these games, just any of these other teams in the playoffs this weekend, man, they got some hosses on their offensive line.
Yeah.
Even when they weren't playing well, they were just, it's night and day, the level of physicality, technique, and everything
technique,
else.
Technique, execution, the mental side of it, just, yeah you're right. I was, what was the early game was the Rams and the Eagles yesterday. The Eagles ran some play where they had a guy pulling, you know, like Saquon. I mean, they got good players, too, that are carrying the football, but you're just watching, and it's a Jeff Stoutland offensive line, so they've been doing this forever. Like, it's just, as a Texan fan, it's depressing to watch those other games and see these other teams execute the way that they
and
do.
And even the Eagles, I mean, they had it was almost a little bit of like a Joe Mixon plus type of performance, because Saquon Barkley was averaging about 2.5 yards per carry on the runs, except for his two huge runs. Yeah. But it's like there's throughout the course of the season, yeah, the blocking, Matt, and it was hard to block, man. I honestly felt bad for offensive linemen for the first time in my life in both those games yesterday.
For the weather?
Because, man, the Rams were running games really, really well, and they made life difficult for the Eagles. Well, I actually know the Eagles were running games even better.
Yeah.
Eagles made life really difficult for the – so I digress. The other big thing that was frustrating was just old man Travis Kelce running roughshod over the Texans defense. That was really – like losing track of Travis Kelce to the point where he didn't even have to serpentine his way around.
Yeah.
He wasn't doing any of that. Remember the one play where Henry Toa was just standing behind – Travis Kelce kind of waiting for him to do his thing.
Yeah.
And Travis Kelce was just standing there. Like, that's, you didn't even get the A plus version of Travis Kelce, and they still lost track of him way too often. I think Azeez Alshire was probably the biggest transgressor on some of the big plays, but they took turns. You know, there was Eric Murray one time, there was Miles Bryant another time. You just can't let Travis Kelce be the guy that's going to crush you like that. Not at his age.
Yeah.
Not with his body type these days.
Yeah.
No.
So my thought coming into this segment was that this game was lost before Saturday. The Texans' loss on Saturday is, to me, Seth, and this plays into the officiating to a degree, like you and I just talked about. But I think it also, getting a home game in the divisional round is ultimately, I think, going to be the recipe for getting the Texans out of this morass that they're in of being the four seed, winning at home, and then going and losing. And this one was frustrating because this is a winnable game. Like a lot of these other divisional round games, last year, for example, they were outclassed. Like the Ravens were just a better football team. Look, it's tough to get deep into the playoffs. Like there's a chance we may look back at this game and go, like in the next couple of years, go, man, their best chance to get to the AFC title game might have been in Kansas City. Kind of a vulnerable Kansas City team that's, you know, that's not... It's a good team. It's not a great team, I don't think. They allowed the Texans to hang in that game. You got a few bad calls from the officials. This is where, though, the Texans, to me, lost that game, is losses that they sustained in the regular season that are just inexcusable. If you can be the two seed and get a home game, you're not going to be victim to those calls, theoretically. You're going to have the crowd on your side. You're going to be playing in a stadium where your defense forces a bleep ton of turnovers, right? They force no turnovers in Kansas City. That is a different Texans team that plays at home. They had losses this year, Seth, from the middle of the season on. They started having these losses that after the game, you and I would read tweets on Monday. The Lions lost, for example, only the third time since 1994 that a team won a game while throwing five interceptions, right?
Yeah.
The Lions, the first team since 19, these are actual stats, first team since 1970 to overcome five interceptions and trail by more than two touchdowns and still win the game. That's week 10. Week 12, 2 weeks later, and these are at home. 2 weeks later, Will Levis, quarterback taking eight sacks and throwing a pick six since 1960, are now 3-33 in those games. 3-33 since 1960. This Chiefs loss on Saturday. The Texans are now the only team in postseason history to outgain their opponent by more than 100 yards and not turn the ball over and lose the game. Teams in the postseason prior to that that fit that statistical profile were 49-0. Like, yeah. And that's not even to talk about, hey, they were plus +3 against the Packers in turnovers. Teams like that win 92% of the time. Actual stat. So that's like, that's actually kind of subdued compared to these historical, these historical kind of blueprints that they've had to walk their way into these losses. So, well, I mean, they lost 8 games on the year, and 4 or 5 of them are games that, the statistical gods would go, no. Maybe you lose one of those this season, right, not five.
That's where, I mean, this last game was kind of set aside because the officiating or the way the rule is enforced on the quarterback, it's whether you want to blame the officials, I tend to blame the rule itself and the way it's enforced and the lack of a ban on the fake slide and all of that, whatever. It was a factor. It's not the only reason the Texans lost. Taking 8 sacks had nothing to do with the quarterback protection rule, but it was a fact. It was certainly a factor when you have the margin like that. I think with a lot of those losses, the biggest thing for me is that, man, the defense improved a lot, but they just absolutely have to stop letting up some of these big plays. Yeah. And this is where D'Amico and I differ in some regards. I really, like, vehemently disagree with D'Amico's philosophy about tackling, to the point where he has said multiple times that he doesn't worry about missed tackles. Because as long as there's a swarm mentality, that's fine in regular season games versus bad opponents. Yeah, if you got a lot of guys rallying to the ball, then yeah, you're going to get people down. But you're also a team that just has allowed way too many huge chunk plays. And the bad tackling is part of that.
Oh, yeah.
You can't all of a sudden, at the very end of the year, D'Amico started talking about how they had to be better at tackling instead of just flat out saying he's not worried about missed tackles. They're one of the worst tackling teams in the league. And it undoes a lot of really good stuff they do defensively. Yeah. I don't get it. I don't understand. I feel like D'Amico and I are wired the same way philosophically in a lot of ways. There have been some very, very good, hard-hitting, physical defenses. The Legion of Boom, specifically, who are the best tackling teams in the league.
Yeah.
They're not. It's not mutually exclusive that you can't hit hard and cause turnovers, but also tackle soundly. They've got to fix that next year. It's sloppy. It's sloppy, and it's I'm philosophically opposed to it.
Travis Kelce. I don't know that I've watched a game where he's broken a tackle all year. Like, he goes down at the touch of a feather. The 49-yard play downfield to him, Kalen Bullock missed, Azeez Al-Shaair missed. He's dragging a guy into the goal-to-go area of the field. Like, it was wild,
It's pathetic. It's really, really bad tackling, and it's unacceptable. And there's got to be a change in methodology, honestly. Some teams have tackling coaches, like specialists that work on it. That team, that defense is too good to be allowing as many passing touchdowns and stupid things like that. And Travis, you're exactly right. We saw Travis Kelce in the regular season. You could sneeze on him and he'd fall down.
Yeah.
And you're just letting that old man. It's like you got knocked out by Morgan Freeman in Million Dollar Baby. You know?
Yes.
He went and Million Dollar Babied you.
That's right. That's right.
I wish I'd been what happened to the chicken that one, falling on a stool. Just been like, that's what I felt like doing. Spoiler alert. I felt like biting my tongue so I could suffocate on my own blood. Okay,
there you go.
Good morning, everybody.
All right, we're off and running on a Reaction Monday. The Texan season is over. We'll talk plenty about that as we roll on here. But yeah, man, be better in the regular season. You don't have to worry about going to Kansas City anymore. You can host a game in the divisional round. That would be nice, I would say. That would be awfully nice. All right, headlines. Let's get to them here. We'll talk Texans in headlines. We'll hear from head coach D'Amico Ryans on exactly what happened in coverage against Travis Kelce and the other 3 playoff games. How are we feeling about these 2 matchups that we've got now in the AFC and NFC title games? We'll hit that in headlines and a whole lot more. We got a college football playoff title game tonight as well. Ton to get to here on a Monday. Stay there.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
Stroud under center, takes the knee. The season is over for the Houston Texans. They charge into Arrowhead Stadium, but come up short 23-14 and see their drive for the AFC Championship game come to an end. Kansas City prevails. Texans start their offseason.
Yeah. That one hurts, man. That was a winnable game for the Texans on Saturday. They lose 23-14 to the Kansas City Chiefs. Obviously, the officiating a big topic in that game. But DeMeco Ryans, I think, hit the nail on the head with this. Until we can do things right, we're not going to win games like this.
As where we stand right now, like, we had to be better. Obviously, we're not good enough to beat a really good football team, right? So we can do the things we need to do consistently and all the time, that's when we'll be able to, you know, come here and be in this spot and win a football game. But unfortunately, like, we still got things to clean up of our own.
Yeah, they are close. I mean, and that's where I try to keep perspective when I'm feeling depressed, is that they are close. And if there's one thing that I hope is real, it's that they did figure out how to run the ball in the last six quarters of the playoffs. That after not really being able to do it consistently almost ever in the regular season, something did click there. I think that there's potential there with Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard on the left side if Titus chooses to accept that mission. My goodness, please do. I think there's potential there. The biggest question for me is really just the offensive line and the pass protection in total, including the tight ends and the running backs, but then also Bobby Slowick and his involvement with it. Like, just where, how far can Bobby Slowick and some of these guys on this offense really take this team? And by the way, they got to go out and get a wide receiver in the offseason.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just, yeah. Like, yeah. Here we are. It 6 months ago, it was, wow, look at these three wide receivers they have. You can't reasonably expect Tank Dell to be ready to go in September, nope, given the horrificness of his injury. And Stephon Diggs is a free agent and old. So,
coming off an ACL.
And coming off an ACL yeah, as an old man.
Yeah.
And we just don't know about Bobby Slowick and the coaching on the offensive line, everything else. Like, there's defense. I don't want to act like, oh, the defense is just going to keep getting better no matter what. But, man, the defense played really well with some blemishes, but with two rookies in the secondary, with Will Anderson as a second-year player, with Henry Toa coming on the way he has, and I think he'll continue to improve. There's a lot more reasons to feel like, okay, yeah, that defense can be championship caliber than there is on offense right now.
Yeah.
CJ, I thought, played very, very well given the circumstances.
I did too. I thought CJ had a really good game. I know it sounds crazy in a game where the offense only scored 12 points to say that, but man, he did not have a lot of help out there, and I thought he made some big-time throws in that game, protected the football, didn't turn the ball over. I think most of the sacks, to me, were more on the protection than on CJ. He wasn't perfect, but I thought more of them were on the protection than on him.
No, and especially when you look downfield and see, especially when Nico Collins wasn't out there, where, and I'll go back, look though, man, I'm watching Washington this weekend, and hey, Cliff Kingsbury, I was skeptical, I didn't want Cliff Kingsbury as an offensive coordinator. You know what I saw Jaden Daniels have? Options, yeah. When there was a corner or safety blitz.
Yep.
I mean, that just, it was an easier operation for Jaden Daniels. Mm-hmm. And I mean, credit to him. It's amazing. Like, he deserves all the credit in the world. But he's a freaking rookie. And he's got options when the protection isn't there. And CJ, it's just not the same.
Gonna be an interesting few days. DeMeco Ryans does meet with the media this morning, I believe 11:30, late this morning. I'm sure the guys on In the Loop will have that, and we'll have highlights of that throughout the day. Because there are still questions to be answered for DeMeco Ryans. He didn't get asked about Shaq Mason being out there in the post-game availability. You know, Shaq was not good. Their best version of the offensive line was the one that was in, that played the second half of that win over the Chargers. And I know Juice Scruggs was banged up also, but Shaq Mason was bad in this football game, really bad in this football game. So that needs to be answered for. DeMeco was asked after the game about Travis Kelce's big afternoon. 7 catches, 117 yards, touchdown. Here was DeMeco on what happened with Travis Kelce.
It's mental miscues, right? I wish I had more for you. It's just mental miscues and coverage, things that we've done before. And unfortunately today, for some reason, in the biggest moment, we don't get it done.
Like, horrible.
I think with Azeez Alshire, I don't know how much his injury might have been affecting him, because there were a couple plays in the run game that I think he, like, very similar to plays that he made last week.
Yeah.
He missed the tackle on Kareem Hunt on that final touchdown drive. In coverage, that Travis Kelce touchdown, I haven't watched on the All-22 yet. I'm watching on I was watching the TV copy yesterday, and I'm just trying to figure out why he, who he's, He's waiting for a crosser to come over when Travis Kelce is the crosser, right into the hole there in the middle of the field. And then Pat Mahomes on that play, that was the one where Pat Mahomes was basically horizontal to the ground as he's throwing it. Yeah. As he's throwing that, like, I would have given Aziz a break if he thought that Mahomes was turning into a runner, because he was running towards the line of scrimmage, and it's right at that point where the linebacker's got to make a decision about whether to go up and tackle the quarterback or not. But Aziz's eyes were off to the left, and Travis Kelce was wide open behind him. And it wasn't – could the safety have gotten there? Maybe, but – like, Aziz could have been in the lane. It just, and there were just too many instances like that with old man Kelce.
Yeah, I hate to say this about Aziz because he was such a big storyline coming into this game. Him being back for this game versus missing the first one. He left the game for a while to get looked at in the tent. You know, he was one of those guys in the press box, Seth. They go, so-and-so is questionable with a knee injury. He was one of those guys in this game. They might have been better off with Neville Hewitt out there on Saturday.
Well, I'll tell you another thing. They played a lot of zone. You know, D'Amico wasn't all out blitzing or anything, and which is fine if you tackle.
Yeah.
And they couldn't tackle Travis Kelce. That's the biggest part. They've got to change their philosophy on tackling in the offseason. It's not acceptable. It just flat out, you can be a hard-hitting defense and still also be good tacklers. And you can't miss tackles like that on Kelce. So the strategy of playing zone was fine if they had limited some of Travis freaking Kelce's run after the catch.
He's the only one.
Yeah. He's not that guy anymore. Yeah. You can't let him be that guy. Yeah. That was very, very disappointing to me.
Yep. All right. The other playoff games, let's touch on these here quickly. Washington beat the Lions in the late game on Saturday, 45-31. This is a game where the Commanders they led for the entire second half of this game. The play that the Lions are getting killed on today and for most of the weekend was, I believe, down 10. I think it was 38-28 at the time. They ran a play with Jameson Williams where he was throwing the ball downfield.
That was listen. Okay, if it had worked out, it would have been brilliant. Earlier in the game, David Montgomery had a shovel pass. Yeah. It was a handoff or a pitch to David Montgomery, and then Montgomery shovel passes it to Amon-Ra St. Brown. Yeah. And it was brilliant because it worked. I do think that it's an indication of, man, Jared Goff just is not the guy.
No.
He's stuck in this mode. Every year now in the playoffs, you see where, all right, well, I can see why Sean McVay, you know, didn't want to. He wanted a guy that long-term could actually get it done. Matt Stafford doesn't put up the same numbers and what have you, but you trust him in crunch time.
Yeah.
Jared Goff had some bad interceptions in that game.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't excuse it because of the weather or anything like that. And I think Ben Johnson, the coordinator, shows exactly what he thinks of Jared Goff. It wasn't just one trick play. It was like, no, we have to have multiple other people than Jared Goff throwing the football.
Yeah, Goff left that game for a little while after getting popped after a pick six that he threw.
Mahomes. If that were Pat Mahomes, he would have gotten flagged 17 times.
17
they
times.
They would have figured, they would have brought a guillotine out on the field to execute the defender.
The first ever play where a player would actually have to Venmo his fine money on the spot right there.
Yeah.
He's suspended on the spot, like on the field, gets yanked off the field. That's what would have happened.
Had to agree to take Jackson Mahomes to a lunch.
Yes, weird stipulations, yes.
Yeah.
But the reason I bring that up is, and I give Ben Johnson credit for this, like Teddy Bridgewater, who was coaching high school football a month ago, literally, comes into the game, and he runs a reverse with Jameson Williams that goes 65 yards or whatever it was for a touchdown. Like, Ben, it sounds weird to say in a game where a Jameson Williams interception on a trick play was a tipping point in this game. But yeah, like I watched this game and I'm like, man, Ben Johnson has squeezed every ounce out of Jared Goff that you can possibly get.
The one issue I'd have with that is a play design. Because again, trick plays, it's always hindsight reasoning. It was either brilliant or the dumbest thing in the world based on whether it works out. I do question having a receiver throw from the middle of the field to the sideline like that. Yeah. Like I prefer to get him out towards space. A boundary and it's clear cut. All right. The DB either bid on it or he didn't. I don't need him making touch fade throws from the pocket.
Philly over the Rams yesterday, 28-22. Saquon Barkley went for over 200 yards again. And then the Buffalo Baltimore game was a fun game too. I don't know how Mark Andrews sleeps on the flight home or last night. Mark Andrews, who put the ball on the ground in the fourth quarter on just a horrible fumble, where the Ravens were driving for a winning or the lead touchdown, and then he dropped a tying 2-point conversion with under 30 seconds to go. That was, for him, for any tight end in the NFL, should have been an easy catch.
It was a classic. Brandy and I almost got in an argument about this in the, last night. It was one of those moments where the throw was probably, I'm not criticizing the throw in itself, but the situation is Lamar knew that he had to throw it with touch. He didn't want to just rifle it in there. And it was almost a little too much touch.
Yeah.
It's still on Andrews. It's 100% on Andrews. But you can see where it's like it's just floating there a little too long.
Yeah.
And it just hit him right in the belly. In the belly. I could see myself doing it. That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's 100% what I would do.
My only solace if I were Andrews would have been, well, it would have tied the game. We might have still lost it in overtime. You know, like if that were to take the lead. Like, if that were to take the lead, like, it's already bad. But, all right, we'll keep it moving. Into the 7 o'clock hour we go. All right, I've got 6 highlights from the game on Saturday between the Chiefs and the Texans that I think each of them highlight a theme of this game that impacted the outcome. The reasons why, where this is the autopsy of all autopsies of a Texans playoff loss that we're going to do, and we'll do it coming up next.